Jupiter Broadcasting presents this show in mega stereo sound. This episode brought to you by the extreme folks over at GoDaddy.com.
This week on the Linux Action Show, it's round two of our Linux home server build project, and we've got the recipe you need to create an awesome Linux server. Then, we cut through all the stank around Oracle suing Google and killing OpenSolaris. Is Oracle the new enemy of open source? We discuss all this week on the Linux Action Show! And welcome to Linux Action Show, Season 13, Episode 3. My name is Brian, with me is Chris.
Hey, Brian. The Axon tablet runs Linux. Check this guy
out. Sure as hell does.
This is brand new, and I'm not going to lie to you guys up front. It's a little pricey, so I'll just get that out of the way.
Yeah.
It's a looking like a really nice tablet, and I'll tell you why.
Tell me why.
They're selling themselves on the ability to run Windows, Darwin, or Linux.
Right.
They're really pushing the whole Darwin angle, claiming that you can run pure Darwin. You can effortlessly
install your favorite Darwin OS.
Yeah, your favorite Darwin OS, whatever that might happen to be, Brian.
Yeah.
But really, it's going to be in the $700 price range is what they're saying, but you're talking essentially it's a netbook. It's a nice 1.6 gigahertz Atom, up to 2 gigs of RAM.
No, there's no keyboard, though.
Nope.
No, it's basically just like the netbooks that you've been hackintoshing, except it costs four times as much and is a tablet.
It's got a nice form factor, a nice screen size, multi-touch, and how many tablets are we seeing shipping right now that let you choose your OS?
Oh, no, that is cool. I dig that a lot.
Yeah,
I got to admit, that right there is worth a little bit of a price bump to me. But
for that future flexibility.
But that mega price bump, I'm not interested in a tablet that runs OS 10.
Yeah, I hear you.
I don't know what I'd do with that. Honestly, I got to be honest, I would put it on there.
Here's what you also
just
get,
because
though.
I like the idea of triple booting with an OS that the company doesn't even want me to use.
You also, though, get a 320 gigabyte hard drive.
That's cool.
1.3 megapixel webcam. You get some built-in USB 2.0 ports. For you video folks, we're showing some of the port options here. You got...
Man, it really does just look like the base of a netbook.
Like they broke the screen off and
put it
on top.
It looks like they took one of the triple E's and ripped the screen off.
I mean, it even has a VGA Ethernet audio out jack, but
that's,
I'll be honest with you, this is almost exactly what you'd like to see in a more...
capable tablet.
This form factor is obviously a win, but its current inflexibility is its major limitation. And this even has the ability to do a Verizon CDMA or other 3G network built-in card.
That is cool.
Right?
Yeah, I do like that.
I know.
Yeah.
So you're talking some serious... Plus, with 320 gigs, it's also going to be the most storage you're going to get in a tablet.
Mm, that's true.
This side of
like
the
that.
Time. I don't know what that means.
The time?
You know, I was thinking the world time. You know, hasn't been released yet.
Yeah, on the other side of the time.
I was gonna say this side of the river, but there's no other tablets like this on the other side of that river.
Which river?
I don't know. You know, the proverbial river.
Oh yeah.
How you feeling?
Now that you mention that, that makes a hell of a lot of sense, Chris.
We should warn people, if you every now and then hear a little whooshing sound, you're not going crazy. We've got a fan going in the studio because
it's warm.
It's a heat wave here in Washington.
It's ridiculous. We are so weak here in Washington State.
Like, a little warm outside.
It randomly gets into the 80s and we all just go, oh,
I know.
Oh, I can't
so
make
hot.
It.
Now, we
just
have
like
a legit
lay
defense,
on the linoleum.
Check out, we have our legit defenses. We have a bunch of studio lights.
It warms up in here.
Yeah, it's like a sun. It's like
we
a winter.
Well,
sun.
Not just that, but then we have all this sound dampening blankets.
Which holds the heat in.
Oh,
I know.
Man. It's really nice in the winter, but
how you feeling? You feeling better?
I'm feeling so much better. But,
you were
check
jacked
this out.
Up.
Check this out. All right. So, yeah, the last 2 weeks, I've been in pain and I've been on painkillers. And
week, you went to the hospital and then came into the show.
Yeah, well,
and then
of
went
course,
home and crashed.
Because I'm a champ.
Right. You got to be hardcore.
Yeah. So here I am.
Okay.
I've had x-rays galore. I've had ultrasounds. I've had a CAT scan.
All right.
And they're like, you know what, Brian? We know you're hurting, but we have no idea what's wrong with you.
We can't figure it out.
But we thought about it. And we think we should inject you with some nuclear radioactive substances and just see what happens.
Now, did you say, okay, guys, that sounds like possibly a good idea, but I've also heard people get mutations from this, like Spider-Man.
Okay, I said most of those words, except it came out more like, thank God I'll be like Spider-Man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay,
it was
yeah,
more
yeah.
along gotcha. Those lines. Okay. So
it was really a sell for you.
So I went down, yeah. Of course. They're, I'm like, dude, seriously? I'm going to be radioactive for a day?
Has anybody seen yes. a spider? I need to get bit real yeah. quick.
They're like, well, you might get cancer. Shut up. I need this. Can you inject me twice?
But my superpowers will help me from the cancer.
Seriously, come on. Come on. Every superpower has its price.
So did you
know what I'm saying?
They injected you? Did your skin glow?
So here's what happened. So I got to explain this because this was way too cool for words. So I go down there. Now, I sit down. They start getting me all prepped up. They're going to inject me with some radioactive substance.
Sure, sure.
And they're gonna like have they put me in this giant room-like chamber for about an hour just to watch my body. Because they just like looking at my body glow, I guess. My organs were glowing, and I could watch in this monitor all my organs
Really?
Glow.
You got to see it?
Yeah, it was really cool.
Oh, cool.
But before they injected me, they pull out the stuff they're going to inject me with.
Right.
It came in this giant canister that literally looked like a gigantic bolt, like something you'd see out of like a 1950s movie where they'd be storing nuclear radioactive rods. They unscrew this giant canister and they pull it out, and it was just this little vial that basically was like a syringe of
that's weird,
saline
dude.
That had a little radioactive stuff in it to inject me. So it didn't look as cool once they opened it up, but
okay.
before they did, it was
you're like it's in this uber protected enclosure.
Yeah, it was huge and awesome, and I was like, dude, that's rad. So they go and inject me. And yeah. then
circulates around,
and I sit there for about 5 or 10 minutes or so, and then I'm joking with everyone about superpowers and the radioactivity. I'm making basically every nerd joke I can vis-a-vis radiation.
Right, you got a limited time where you have been injected with radioactivity.
And here's
yeah.
the thing: I was kicking myself because I didn't prepare ahead of time.
Should have brought a cape.
So then they realized how much I was enjoying this. They bust out the Geiger counter.
No.
I kid you not. They bust out this old school Geiger counter. It looked like something you'd see out of like a bomb shelter in the 50s. And they checked it out on me.
Wow.
And I pegged that sucker.
No.
It was like. I saw the needle flashing and I'm like, dude, that's awesome.
It's your body, dude.
This is my body.
I don't know how awesome that
they
is.
They start scanning it over me and waving the wand over me. My Geiger counter setting off. I'm like, can I do this? Can I check myself? They're
yeah.
like, yeah, here you go. I was able to hold the Geiger counter and check it a couple of times. I'm
that's
like, dude,
cool.
That's awesome.
Man.
Get this. So the stuff they injected had a half-life of 6 hours.
6 hours.
Which means,
okay.
So every 6 hour, you know, it was basically, it was half as awesome.
Right.
So I lost half of my powers every 6 hours.
Oh, man, okay.
Which sucked because, you know, climbing tall buildings and,
right.
and I could see through
sometimes,
women's clothing.
Sometimes
that was
you get
cool.
to the top of the building and then
yeah.
it wears off. What do you do?
What do you do? So, so by 24 hours in, I was all flushed and everything.
Yeah.
But get this. It came out of my body through my tinkle. So that means my tinkle was radioactive for a full day. So they're like, is there anything I need to do? They're like, well, you should flush 2 or 3 times. I'm like, are you serious? So like, if I tinkle in my toilet,
a couple times?
Is my toilet going to sit there and like
be
slowly
radioactive?
Melt or something
right.
like that? Yes. It's not so radioactive that it's going to like hurt anything, but it's going to be a little radioactive.
So you had a radioactive toilet.
I had a radioactive toilet for a day
tinkle.
because of my manpower. So this whole time that they were doing this, I was in a lot of pain. Like my chest was still
right,
hurting.
Right.
I was feeling awful. But it didn't matter. It was so worth it.
That is a highlight.
Like, I'm like, dudes, if you guys ever get the opportunity to be in tons of pain for 2 weeks, do it
so
if they're
that.
Willing to give you this.
Now, I have got two separate...
But I'm feeling a lot better now. Thanks.
That's good.
They never figured out what it was.
That's
radiation
they,
does not
did,
tell you what's wrong with me.
Did they assume it was muscle? Is that what it was?
Yeah, I think they assumed I had some stupid muscle problem because I'm a wuss.
I've got two Android picks this week. One is just came out in beta, and it's awesome. And the one just came out of beta. So one went into in, one came out. They're both really awesome. But before we say that, we should say holla to our buddies over at GoDaddy.com.
Absolutely. This episode of Linux Action Show is sponsored by GoDaddy.com, the world's largest web host and domain name registrar. If you're ready to make an impact online, GoDaddy.com has got you covered. Domain names as low as $1.99, plus world-class hosting with unlimited disk space and bandwidth. Do-it-yourself website builders, this is dedicated servers, SSL certificates, and so
Ooh.
Much more. Plus, as a Linux Action Show viewer, enter promo code Linux. Just do that at checkout. 10% off the entire order. Go to GoDaddy.com. You're going to like that.
All right.
And we also have something else, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. We got a
special one.
We got a temporary code. Now, I got to warn you guys. This is just a thanks from GoDaddy, so it's a limited. There's only a few of these in actual quantity. But if you enter the code ACTION199.
All in caps. So ACTION in power caps.
199. That's one word. You get the domain for $1.99.
That's pretty cool.
I think there's literally like a handful of these. So if you've been thinking about getting a domain, use that.
I'm probably going to just go use them all.
I know, I got all kinds
of
ideas.
So the show comes out in a couple of hours. Yeah, I'm gonna go run home and just use them all.
All right, so my Android picks are the first one I'll cover is the one that just came out of beta. And I'm going to cover this one quickly because I know not all of you have Froyo yet. More and more. But maybe something to look forward to as you get Froyo. And there's also a few ways to do this without. But Google Chrome to phone just came out. And I've been using the beta for a little bit. So I thought I could talk about it for a bit. And
I think so.
It's essentially that. Anything you're at in the Chrome browser, there's a little extension you can get that pairs with the program on your Android phone, and you can send anything in your Chrome browser to your Chrome phone via push. And it's smart about it. It's contextually aware. So like a map, if you bring up a map in Chrome, your web browser on your desktop, you can send that map to your phone, and it'll start up the navigation program and start navigating you there. So you can like, oh, I need to go. I do this all the time, right? Client emails me their address. I go look it up on the Google Maps, Chrome to phone. Now I'm navigating. It's cool. You can send links. If you find a cool Android app,
that's
you can find
groovy.
It. Chrome to phone it. You got it.
Chrome to phone.
All right. Now the next.
Plus, it sounds cool to say Chrome to phone.
The next Android pick on
sounds
my
a lot
list.
Like Kodachrome.
Anytime you go with
which
Chrome,
is a Paul Simon song.
Anything you make Chrome, I mean, they really did. They picked a good name with Chrome. You know, there's a lot of browsers that have come out. Like, what was the Firefox guys that they started? The guys that originally started the Mozilla project started that new one. Like, was it Melted Earth or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
It's a weird name, Chrome.
And we never heard anything else based on that.
No,
it just kind of went away.
You know? Chrome.
Chrome.
So the next pick
and
on
honestly,
the.
Honestly, I prefer the name Chromium.
Yeah.
It just sounds awesome. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know what that is.
It's cool the open source project got the cooler name.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah, that makes me happy.
So the next one here is TweetDeck, and this is TweetDeck for the Android, and it's like no other Android app out there. It's like no other Twitter app out there either. It's actually really cool, and calling it just a Twitter app is a bit of a misnomer because finally it's one application that connects to Identica, I think, Buzz, Facebook, Twitter, all the different social networks.
That's pretty cool.
You can send out, right? Of course. You've been able to do that for a little bit. You could send out to all the networks. This will collate all of your replies into one spot across all of
groovy.
The networks, and then you can respond via that network to that person. So if somebody sends me something on Twitter or Facebook, I can respond in both places.
It's like Gwibber for the Linux desktop, except it's for your Android phone.
And it's really, really slick.
Which, by the way, if you guys are using Linux and you're not using Gwibber,
you
got to check out Gwibber. I know a lot of you KDE guys, it's a GNOME application.
It's a great Identica client,
but it's really great. It's a phenomenal client, collates everything together, lets you, when you click reply to a user, it replies to their right service. It's really great.
If any of the TweetDeck guys are watching the Linux Action Show, this is truly one of the best Android apps I've ever used.
They did an awesome job.
And it sounds like this has been such a hit, they're going to roll this out across all of the other platforms. Now they're going to go with this approach. So that's really cool.
They should.
Now you've got an Android pick.
I got an Android pick this week, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, I need to back up. I have three news items that I want to share.
Whoa.
With a body.
Okay. We're not even in the news segment, so this is a special treat.
I'm going to start with the low end of it. All right.
Okay.
First, this is all Illumination software creator based. All these announcements. First up, we're having a contest.
Oh, yeah.
So we're having a monthly contest where we've announced it at the end of every month, basically what it is. If you go to radicalbreeze.com, we're doing a thing where we have a specific project to create. This week, it is a number guessing game. You create a number guessing game. The person who creates it in the least number of blocks, and if there's a tie, we split we each person who ties for the first place wins, gets a set of prizes. This week's we're giving away gift certificates to goodoldgames.com, which
awesome.
Is an awesome site if you haven't seen it before.
That's a great idea.
So you get to pick what game you want. Any of these games are great, and we'll give you a gift certificate. Plus, we're going to donate a big bunch of licenses for Illumination Software Creator to any school of your choice or any like school-ish organization.
That's a good idea.
Like a YMCA even would count, or a homeschool, anything that's a school thing. We're just going to give a whole bunch away. So that's kind of cool. Second thing is we're having a sale right now through Wednesday to name your own price.
Oh,
that's kind of groovy.
Yeah.
So you want to pay only a couple bucks, fine. Pay only a couple of bucks.
Name your own price. That's pretty risky.
The third thing. full Android support.
What?
So Illumination Software Creator can build visually for Python and GTK apps. That's cool. So you can build your desktop apps for Python GTK. Nice. Yeah. You can build MAMO apps. That's nice. You can build Flex web applications. So you can build a nice, big, interactive Flash website with it. That's nice. We've already announced Haiku support.
I love that,
which is kind of in private beta right now. We've got a couple of Haiku devs looking at it right now. And they had a ton of feedback for us.
Yeah?
They're like, you're doing this great. Except for these like three spots, you really screwed up, Brian. And I was like, oh, my bad. And so they gave me a bunch of feedback. So we're incorporating that, and we're going to get that out.
RA is dead, and the chat room was wondering if you'll have if Illumination Software can generate the source code for Android.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Here's the great thing. So we're releasing this, I believe, this show comes out Sunday. I believe we have it scheduled to go out with, you know, press releases and beta and the beta version on Monday. I think so anyway. I think it's either Monday or Tuesday morning that's set to go out. So it might already be out when you're watching this.
Is this a free update for people that already own it?
Totally a free update. Come on. Who are you talking to here?
There you go.
I'm not a jerk. So yeah. So what it does, check this out. This is kind of cool. We're calling it a developer preview, even though it is completely fully functional.
For Android.
But because we want a lot of your guys' feedback. So basically what it is, you take your application, your project you've already built. You don't have to make any changes to it at all. You go project, build for Android. It spits out an entire Eclipse project.
Oh, I see.
With all of the source code, all of the resources,
there's the source
everything.
Code right there.
And you can do whatever you want to it. You can go in and change it. You can tweak it. You can release that as open source. You can do whatever you want, and it's full Java Android project.
Cool.
With no limitations, no gotchas, no run times, no extra requirements. Hey,
you're making some sales
nothing.
Right now in the chat room.
Dude, I better be.
How
this
cool is
freaking
that?
Fantastic.
That's really cool.
Like,
man.
I am
so, okay, what's
so
the platform
uber excited about this.
So you got Android, you got MAMO,
yep.
You got desktop, you got Air.
Yep.
What else we got?
And Flex and Flash
Flex,
for web and
yep.
Haiku.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, basically, we're hitting darn near everything. Just about the only thing we're not hitting is like iPhone, iPad.
Oh, it does Windows too, right?
Yeah, yeah. So Linux, right. Linux, Windows,
it's
and Mac
desktop,
for Python and GTK apps all work great. And the app itself, Illumination itself, runs on Linux, Windows, and Mac.
That's pretty cool.
Linux
dude.
Is the premier platform. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to mince words. It's developed on Linux for Linux first.
That's cool.
But
I
that's
like it.
That's it. So
but it does the other OSs.
So
cool,
yeah.
Dude.
So I wanted to mention this because Google's got the Android App Inventor, and they haven't actually made it so people can download it yet.
Yeah. Well, did you see that David Pogue at the New York Times just recently reviewed it?
Yeah.
And he said, "What's all the excitement about? This is awful."
Yeah.
He was not impressed.
So I took a good look at it, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You can't actually really use it to release apps for the App Store.
Oh.
So here's the thing. So the Android App Inventor is very, very cool. It is a visual development environment, but it is nothing like Illumination. In that Illumination is super easy to use. It's
multiple platforms.
Like, it really is more like Lego blocks for software. Like a kid could pick it up and use it.
Yeah.
Whereas Android App Inventor is an actual procedural programming language. It's just that you can't type it. You have to drag and drop it.
Oh.
So, in fact, it's actually harder to use in that it slows you down. You can't work as fast.
Because you still have to know what all of those
It's easier. It's easier to learn, like, because you can see a list of the things you can do.
Right.
But once you've learned
but
it,
you
you're
stuck. You have to know what that list means.
And here's the other thing.
That's the hard part for me.
Android App Inventor, once you learn how to use it, it doesn't help you to develop Android applications.
Or other platforms.
Because the languages and APIs you're using in Android App Inventor are not actual normal Android APIs.
For me, it just doesn't make sense to develop in any language that only creates applications.
For one platform.
Yeah. That's just
Why?
Too limiting.
Why?
Unless I want to do it for every single platform.
So I'm incredibly excited about this. I've tried to be quiet about it. People have been asking for Android support since I released Illumination, and it hasn't been working.
Well, you've been in licensing deals with Oracle. No, I'm kidding.
We'll talk about that later. But we didn't want to release it until we felt like it was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't want to release it until you could build a project and actually open it up in Eclipse and run it.
That's cool.
Without any warnings, without any errors, without having to touch a thing. You don't even have to touch a property. In fact, get this. If you install Eclipse with the Android SDK now.
Sure.
And you go file, new Android project. There sometimes are a couple of hiccups. Like sometimes some of the properties for the project aren't set and you have to fix a few errors. It's not that hard.
Okay.
But there's still a few problems sometimes. With Illumination.
So that's all that?
No problems. No warnings, no errors, out of the box, full Android application.
That's cool. I'm going to check it out.
Totally kick ass. I'm super excited. So we're going to release that's in going to be in beta over at lunduke.com either Monday or Tuesday. I don't remember what day we set for it. But if you want the betas, that's the place to check it out. I had to mention it. I know it's self-promotory.
We'll put a link in the
guys.
Show notes.
But come on, that is pimping.
That's getting now people can sit down and make desktop Linux apps and Android apps and Windows desktop apps and Mac.
Seriously.
You know, it's totally worth
you know
it.
What, you know what?
Check
weird,
out the link in the show notes.
Me out?
Huh.
I'm like the only thing doing this.
I know.
Me. Brian from the Linux Action Show is like the only guy doing this.
Pretty wild.
And if you want to pick up the release copy or buy it from the store, you can do so over at radicalbreeze.com as well.
There you have it.
Just going to lay that out there. I'm sure you guys will be seeing a lot more about it this week because honestly, I don't know how the big news sites aren't going to cover this, and I don't know if my server can handle it.
Here, we'll find out.
Because
we'll find out.
Come on. Android and iPhone stories. That's everywhere, right? We were just talking about this last week.
It really is. It's like what everybody talks about.
And I was worried about releasing this until I was ready. Because I'm like, what if I...
If it does get picked up.
What if I put this in beta, and it gets picked up everywhere, and it's just kind of a little buggy, but kind of cool?
Yeah.
I was afraid everyone would see it and be like, dude, it's not ready yet.
Right.
And then that's the last it would be
of it. That is kind of a whole new risk factor in this current
news.
So
we had to wait until we're like, dude, this is awesome.
Yeah.
This is like rock solid awesome.
Yeah.
So and this is why we're really calling it developer preview to save our skirts. In case a random bug is found, like by the Engadget community
make sure
or something
you get
like
out,
that.
You gotta have enough people out there with their hands on it. Then you'll say, oh, it's good. It's good.
Yeah, it's good now. I'm totally pulling a Google. I'm like, oh, it's beta. It's practically pre-beta, even though it's fully functional and it's practically ready for release.
That's a good way
I'm
to go.
Going totally
keeps
to
it
Google.
Safe,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, I'm covering my butt on that one.
All right, Brian. Now with all of that said, woo. Let's do the news.
What's new in the news this week?
All right, Brian.
Besides the fact that Illumination Software Creator builds Android applications.
Besides that huge news, Brian.
Freaking Android applications.
I've actually, this story, I wish we didn't
And thanks everyone for tuning in to the Linux Action Show today.
That's all
that
we
is the
you.
Only piece of important or happy news going on in the world.
I know, the rest is just stuff that you just almost don't even want to talk about.
The rest of this stuff is bummer news, man.
So, Oracle. Everybody knows what happened with Oracle this last week. Oracle is suing Google over the use of Android,
Java in Android.
Basically, the use of Android at this point. This is one of them bombshells that rocked the industry late last week.
Dude.
And according to Google, according to Oracle, Google knowingly and directly, repeatedly infringed on Oracle's Java-related intellectual property. That's their statement. They believe that the Dalvik, I don't know exactly how you pronounce that.
Dalvik.
The Dalvik VM is where the contention is at. And
gotcha.
Interesting take on this from a lot of different people out there. Now, I know a lot of you probably have heard about this, but essentially, Oracle is claiming that some of the fundamental aspects to Android infringe on their patents. They don't just want Google to stop selling Android phones. They want all Android phones on the market destroyed.
Holy Lord.
Now, there's been some interesting reactions to this around the community.
Right after Android becomes the number one
interesting, right?
smartphone platform.
Kind of funny how that worked out.
Successful.
Also,
they attack
strange that the CEO of Oracle is best friends with Steve Jobs. Just pointing that out. And then also what's interesting.
Also, the CEO of Oracle is crazy.
Yes.
He is known affectionately in the industry. Larry Ellison is as Crazy Larry. Bring open a picture of Larry Ellison if you can find one here.
Now, also of note is Miguel Itikaza of Gnome and Mono fame, sometimes a polarizing figure in the community. And he said that, hey.
Get the one of him eating.
Oh, okay.
That's fantastic. Scroll down there.
Oh, man, that is a great picture.
This is Larry Ellison, ladies and gentlemen, your Oracle CEO, according to Google Images.
Now,
and he loves him some hot dog.
Miguel Itikaza pointed out that he had heard rumors and maybe even some official...
Okay, you got to take that picture off. That's freaking me out.
Some official email exchanges from prior Sun employees when they left during the Oracle-Sun merger, because Oracle just recently completed their acquisition of Sun. Sun was the original IP holders of Java, and Miguel Itakaze posted on his blog that Sun CEO Jonathan Schwartz, before Sun sold to Oracle, was literally, as part of their shopping to other companies, was saying, by the way, we've got this huge case, we believe, against Google. If you buy us, you get this lawsuit, too.
Yeah, it's a prepackaged lawsuit. It comes gift-wrapped.
The BS thing about that is that...
such a douche move.
He was out there, Schwartz was out there campaigning against how awful driving technology through litigation is. At the same time, he was shopping this to... Now, this is just a rumor, but there's several people that have backed it up, including ex-Sun employees. Then people at the Oracle meetings during the transition from Sun to Oracle said that there was literally people in the room whose purpose was to ask about Java IP and Google. Like that, like they,
that
from the point
thing.
Of acquisition, they were there.
Dude.
Now, there's also been some implications that Sun and then Oracle and Google were sitting down at tables for months before this trying to work out some sort of licensing agreement. And I just want to say, I find the irony in all of this, that this is the exact problem that we said was going to happen to Mono, and it happened to Java.
And, you know, here's the crazy thing. So everyone's, everyone has been talking about this happening with Mono
and look
for
where
years.
We're at.
For years.
Because it's
and
not...
they said that Java was the safe haven. Why do we need Mono? We have Java, and it's safe.
It's safe.
Because Sun is nice.
All it takes is a leadership change. But apparently even that leadership was already shopping that. And I want to remind everybody, this isn't a case of they're re-implementing the Java spec of some type. It's it's the fact that you can take actual Java bytecode and execute it in a non-Sun Java VM.
Right.
Google did a clean house building of their own VM.
Right.
And you know, that's essentially what Mono is. And so their comparisons are being drawn here that this could have happened. And funny, because you've got Apple with the iPhone and their App Store and their closed platform. And now you've got Google, and you've got Google's recent net neutrality debacle. You've got their movement to use your personal private data for more advertising options. Now they're getting sued by Oracle, who we thought maybe was an open source friend, but also with the killing of Open Solaris, and now the suing
over Java.
We'll get
into that in a minute.
Yeah. All of this, I'm almost afraid to say this on the Linux Action Show, but out of these three companies who are playing in the mobile space, Microsoft looks like the good guy right now.
Dude, is that weird or what?
Yeah.
Microsoft looks like the open source friendly, happy, go lucky, wonderful guy.
At least not the destroyer.
Well, like, seriously,
they just almost win by default by not being the one that's being evil.
Like, in terms of Mono, like, look at Mono. They've done Mono all over the place. You can even do Mono Touch on an iPhone, right? Does Microsoft care?
No,
they actually don't. It like there have been people in Microsoft who have come out and said that seems cool. Like, so I've got to stand back, and I'm like, well,
you know that as soon as Microsoft gets the opportunity, they're going to pounce.
Yeah, you know, you might be right on that.
Yeah.
I look at this, and I mean the naive part of me thought Oracle wouldn't do this.
I know.
I have no trust
but
in Oracle.
I have no trust.
I've never liked
and
Oracle.
And when they did
that
Unbreakable
much,
Linux, it didn't feel right.
Well, that was just dumb.
Yeah.
That was a dumb distro.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I didn't think they'd go through with this because it seems like such bad PR.
It makes you wonder.
You know what I mean? Like, why would you buy Java? Why would you buy Sun? Why would you get all those assets that are so tied to Solaris, Java, Linux, and then go on the offensive in a way that would piss off the Solaris, Java, and Linux camps?
Here's the flip side. Is it good that there's somebody out there that can challenge Google? Because Google is becoming that huge, huge beast.
Mega corporation.
Is it good that there's a company out there that can still fight them? Or is Google just going to squash Oracle?
I don't know.
Oracle, you're a freaking database company. Get off your high horse.
Oracle's huge.
I know.
Oracle's huge.
Because they charge too much for their crappy database. It's not crappy.
But they have like a ton of money. Like, was it Oracle and PeopleSoft too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that PeopleSoft is everywhere.
This is not going to be the kind of fight that is going to be a fun one to watch.
No.
Somebody's going to lose big.
These are some of the biggest companies in the world.
With some of the biggest patent portfolios.
And they're going after each other for the most high-profile products in their portfolios right now.
Yeah,
I mean, this literally is like, you know, if IBM and Microsoft went to war against each other for using computers.
I wish I could travel back in time and punch Sun's management in the nuts for... I mean,
literally, because I know Oracle will sue us because now they own Sun, so...
It just feels like this whole, you know, Java open sourcing effort that we went through to get the trust built up, so this exact kind of stuff would happen. This is exactly the intention to open sourcing Java here. And then another company comes in, a changing of the guards, and now we're so happy.
Now it makes you
wonder, what else are we out there vulnerable like this for? And if something major, if the number one smartphone OS out there, or at least in the U.S., can be just attacked like this out of nowhere, what else are we using today, every day, that's vulnerable like this as soon as there's a management change?
And, you know, this, you know, and only, what was it, a couple of months ago, Apple started suing HTC because of Android.
Yep.
So, I mean,
it's a multifaceted attack against
people. People are attacking Android right now.
And you got to figure that if Oracle were to somehow win, even at some level with this lawsuit, they'll probably go after handset manufacturers.
Yeah.
Or what about other Java VMs out there?
Which there are a bunch of.
Yeah. I mean, it's very scary. Now let's talk about while we're hating on Oracle.
Ridiculous.
Let's keep that energy going.
Just to be clear, this is a great reason to use a development tool that targets multiple platforms, because you never know when these companies are going to come along and just beat the crud out of you and say you can't release an app anymore.
That's true.
So
let's talk about how evil they are. Oracle is ending OpenSolaris. Now, I don't think either one of us are not going to lose our desktops over this.
I'm not an OpenSolaris user, but that sucks.
The innovation was there. I mean,
like
we took the Linux has taken the inspiration from DTrace, right? And now we have an implementation of that. Obviously, we've been watching a lot of developments over there. They have a lot of cool stuff. But Oracle decided to come in and crap on everybody's party. Here's what they said. All of Oracle's efforts on binary distributions of Solaris technology will be focused on Solaris 11.
Okay.
We will not release any other binary distributions, such as nightly or biweekly builds of Solaris binaries, or open Solaris 2010.5 or later distributions. So VARs who are building around open Solaris technology, screwed.
Yep.
People who are developing application platforms around Solaris that used open Solaris to track the development and build, screwed. The community they have built is screwed. But what really stings, in my opinion, is the people at Sun and now Oracle who are working on it, who were working on open Solaris because they really believed in developing a great enterprise class open source operating system that could complement or compete with Linux. And here was one of the quotes from a developer on his blog said, "This is a terrible send-off for countless hours of work, for quality software which will now ship as an Oracle product that we, the original authors, can no longer obtain on an unrestricted basis." This is Steve Stallion, I think is how you say his name. I like that.
Steve Stallion.
He's a software engineer out of Atlanta who was a contributor to Open Solaris. Extremely bummed. He says that now we don't even have rights to the software that we created. This change is just a total uprooting.
Yeah.
Oracle says in a memo that while we can't do everything, the limiting factor is our engineering bandwidth. Oh, I love the corporate speak. It's our engineering bandwidth measured in people and time.
Well,
so we have to ensure our top priority is driving the delivery of the number one enterprise operating system, Solaris 11, to grow our business.
Well, okay. 2 points I want to make there. One, Oracle's right. If they had continued to keep it in-house, that does take people and resources. However,
in development, though.
However, right, if they keep it in the community, it doesn't.
Then they get the choice of accepting innovations or not.
And they, in fact, could reduce their internal development staff because it's being done openly and therefore save money.
Yeah.
Which tells me that Oracle literally has no idea what open source is, how to use it, what its pitfalls or benefits are.
Well, here's
that
I think
is ridiculous
this,
to me.
This quote from the memo exactly sums up how Oracle thinks about open source.
Even Microsoft understands open source. Even if they don't use it all the time, at least they get it. Oracle obviously doesn't even know what it is.
No, Oracle actually implied that Open Solaris compromised their competitive position. Here's the quote from the memo. "We want the adoption of our technology and intellectual property to accelerate our overall goals, yet not permit competitors to derive business advantage, or FUD, from our innovations before we do." So essentially implying that if we open source the code,
then people
will copy
us and
they'll
copy it. Yeah.
Which, that is a clear indication they don't understand the licensing model around open source and how all of that works. So I'm really glad that that they believe they'll continue to grow a vibrant developer community and system administrator community. Bullcrap. If I'm the system administrator and I can't freely get your OS and I have to pay thousands of dollars to get it, I'm not going to run it on my desktop, which means I'm not going to develop scripts, which means I'm not going to administer my other systems from it, which means I'm not going to install it on multiple locations, which means I'm not going to use it.
Right.
It's I'm going to use, even it's if I simple. Have Solaris servers, I'll be using Linux to manage them. It's,
right.
It's as easy as that. They obviously don't get it. They've been working in this large corporate structure where the decision to buy an Oracle product comes from a vendor and a manager who has a $1 million budget. But the implementation of the technology that comes from the system administrator's level at the ground level, the people on the ground that make the recommendations, the people that build the buzz, that make the deployments, they're going to stop using your crap. You're eating away at your own market. And they'll see that. They'll learn that the very hard way.
You know what's crazy?
Sun was just starting to turn around because of this stuff.
Exactly. Just. They were on the cusp of doing the right thing.
I know. It's so dumb. And they screw us in the process.
It's infuriating is what it is. And over the last half year to year, Oracle and Apple and the combination therein has replaced Microsoft as the evil empire.
It's driving me nuts. Like, I don't know what's up and what's down anymore.
There was a point several years ago where Microsoft seemed to sue everything that crawled.
Yeah, yep. Ballmer would open his mouth constantly.
You know what? They've let off of that. They have a couple of open source projects that have, you know, iffy usability. But at least it's something.
I was just looking at a Notepad editor that they released that's under the GPL. It's like this Windows presentation editor. And I'm like,
they have some GPL code they released.
And I just don't know how to.
Most of their stuff is not GPL. Most of their stuff is under different.
But
licenses.
My brain doesn't know how to make the connections. Oracle being evil, and at the same week, Microsoft
Oracle
on a GPL application. What the heck
Oracle
is going on?
And Apple attacking your freedom on a constant basis, attacking other companies on a constant basis, acquiring companies in a rabid, crazy succession, just so that they can sue other companies to take away your freedom. And Microsoft's just over there like, you know, maybe making some mistakes, but not doing all that bad. I'm like, really, what is happening to the world right now?
You know we can't trust Microsoft because they're always going to be driven by whatever the market conditions are, and that will be based on what they make their decisions right now.
That's true. I mean, it's a big company. What can you do?
Right now, it's probably more. It makes more market sense for them to play along. But down the road, what happens?
Yeah, it might
when
change
those,
again.
Yeah, and it just sucks being trapped in this position. And what some people pointed out was, you know, well, there's.
Maybe it's the end of times.
This is a strong advantage of open source, but we need to be careful who we rely on.
No, dude. Someone in the chat room saying, is this the apocalypse? Yeah, I'm saying maybe. You know, I'm not going to go on the record here, but unofficially off the record, Brian of the Linux Action Show says, this may be the first sign of the coming apocalypse for whatever random faith you may have. If there's an apocalypse in it, this is probably the sign that
now,
it's coming.
If you want to bury your head in the sand about the apocalypse and just have yourself a good day, let's talk a little bit about the new Ubuntu installer.
I really need some good news, man.
The new Ubuntu installer is coming out with Ubuntu 10.10. Have you heard the new name of Ubuntu 10.10?
Lay it on me.
Maverick Meerkat.
Yeah.
M-E-E-R-K-A-T?
Yep.
Meerkat?
No, that's actually kind of a good name.
I kind of like it too.
Well, it's
Maverick is what I like.
Meerkat Manor is a really popular show.
Oh.
Meerkats are adorable. You know that Meerkat Manor show where they have like basically it's webcams. It's like watching that Big Brother show where it's just like webcams.
Yeah, like that.
Except it's
the
meerkats,
stuff.
and they're like, "Oi, there goes little Johnny. He's going into his home right now, and he feels real sad about his day's catch." And it's literally like you're watching a bunch of meerkats run around, and it's adorable.
Okay,
I don't really watch
the Maverick version of that.
So this is the Maverick. Okay. So I'm assuming this is the meerkat that like wears a cape and you know just runs around doing crazy stuff, which I
or
like
campaigns
the
idea for John McCain. So this here is the new improvements they're making, one of which I'm excited about.
Only one?
Well, because I'll get the one I'm not excited about.
All right.
Built-in support for installing codecs and proprietary drivers at the start. Now, if you can avoid using that stuff, my hat's off to you. If you can't, this is a very nice thing because it's probably one of the first things you did when you got in.
Yeah.
Let's just all be honest.
Dude.
It also comes with a new improved design, which is, to me, looks a lot like the old one, but polished. So, hey, that's good. Now, the reason why I'm covering this is mainly because of the built-in codecs, because a year ago, or maybe it was a little more than a year ago, it was controversial just to include the ability to have an application, to have an option
with a
warning to install codecs.
It created a firestorm in some communities.
And now that's gotten to the point now where we're just doing it at the beginning. Yeah. One quick note, if you're testing out Maverick Meerkat just recently hit Alpha 3, I think, and Feature Freeze. And one of the things that right now isn't in the graphical installer, so if you want to play with this stuff, you're going to have to download the alternate version of Ubuntu.
The Butter.
It's the Butter FS. You're not going to be able to set that using the GUI installer. Also,
okay.
If you're a big LVM user with encryption, you're not going to be able to do that. But
That's okay. From everything I've seen, butter's not quite ready anyway.
Yeah, why
not? So I'm all right. You know, let's wait until it's all set. I mean, it looks like a great file system, but let's wait.
Now, I got one last link here from the chat room because they sent it to us, and this is a happy-go-lucky feeling story.
Yeah, this makes me happy. Let's spring this one up.
This is a ASCII screensaver, and if you're already running one of the later KDEs, which neither one of us do, apparently you've already got it, but we'll also include a download link, and I don't have the animated version up right now, but it's literally an animated aquarium screensaver.
It is called the ASCII Aquarium.
The ASCII Aquarium. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes. Head over to jupiterbroadcasting.com. I'm sorry,
but that is about 10 times cooler than any 3D fish swimming around.
And I asked the chat room, and they said it actually really is ASCII, not like vectors, which means it's got to have like super low CPU usage.
That's so great.
Which is brilliant when you're having a screensaver.
So fantastic.
All right, Brian. Well, that's all the news for this week. We've got DLP on the line. DLP, a.k.a. Dave from the chat room, was a recent Linux convert, and he'd been watching the show as a Windows user, right, David?
Yeah, that's correct.
And now you switched over to Linux, and we said...
Wait a minute.
We've been following his journey in the chat room.
Wait a minute.
And I wanted to get him in the show.
Wait a minute.
What?
Hold on.
Go.
So, you were watching the show.
Yeah.
How long did you watch the show for?
I watched it probably for 2 or 3 months.
You watched it for 2 or 3 months?
As a Windows user.
As a Windows user.
As a Windows user,
Can I ask you a question, Dave?
Yeah.
Why on God's green earth?
Why'd it take so long?
Would you be, A, yes, why'd it take so long? And B, why would you watch the show if you don't run Linux? Why would you do that? Why would you subject yourselves to our ugly faces and these annoying grating voices of ours for 2 months if you don't run Linux?
All right, so let me just clarify a little bit. I did run Linux on a server.
Okay, so you had a little Linux experience.
All right, so you're legit.
So how has it been going from the server now to the desktop? Has that been a big transition?
So the server set up with no GUI, so, I mean, everything was command line, and I had to do a lot of Googling and figure out the command line and stuff because I've always been used to a GUI. Now that I've switched over to desktop Linux, for the most part, I've had no problems whatsoever. My netbook was my biggest problem. I tried getting Mego on it, didn't realize that the Wi-Fi wouldn't work. Then I tried getting OpenSUSE to work on it, and that won't boot from a USB stick, so I finally wound up with a bunch of Netbook Remix.
Oh, I got you.
How do you like them?
I really like the UI from Ubuntu Netbook Remix, but not as much as I did the Mego interface. I really enjoyed the Mego interface.
The Mego interface is pretty slick, right?
Oh, it's awesome. So it's kind of... It's like professional and cartoonish in the same thing, and it's just
totally
it's like a good balance. Yeah.
So when you find out that that's working on your netbook, are you going to switch over to that, or are you going to stick with the Ubuntu Netbook Remix? You think?
No, I put it in my blog. As soon as Mego gets Realtek Wi-Fi drivers, if you have a Broadcom chip, you can actually get it working right now. But Realtek's not supported, so as soon as they get support in there for that. I'm going back to Mego.
Nice.
Yeah, we should say that DLP has been blogging his journey as a Linux desktop convert over. What is your blog, DLP?
What's your blog?
My blog is blog.lukotech. That's lukotech.com.
Cool. Now,
nice.
Before we hang up on you, I wanted to ask you what has been the biggest surprise for you switching to the desktop for Linux? Is there any kind of positive or negative? I guess.
I'll give you one of each. Positives: the customization levels are just through the roof.
Yeah.
I mean, I can change everything the way that I want it to be. Colors,
sure.
Graphics. Everything, and it's awesome. The negative would be just some of the support isn't 100% there in the UI for like GNOME. Like, there's a couple of minor glitches that you just can't get fixed right now, and that's what bothers me.
But that's kind of an annoyance level stuff. You haven't had to run into any showstoppers?
Yeah, I have actually had one showstopper, which pushed me back to Windows, and that's there's. Right now, my computer doesn't have enough processing power to handle .mts files off my video camera.
You got to have like a special Windows codec or something for playback on that. Yeah, that kind of weird stuff that's like a weird codec accelerator and stuff like that can sometimes be still a gotcha.
It totally can.
Yeah. Well, all right, dude. Well, I wanted to say thank you for calling into the show and telling us about that, because we've been following your journey in the chat room. Every Sunday morning, DLP has been in there, and it's been like a – we've gotten the Linux Switch update, and I just thought it'd be fun to put that in the show. So thanks for calling in, dude.
Related note, if you haven't tried them out yet, I highly recommend checking out the Fluendo codec pack.
Yeah, that might help.
It might give you some help if you're using GStreamer-based applications, just because they make some of the best, highest quality codecs I've seen for any platform.
Word.
So just highly recommend those, if at least worth trying.
Awesome.
Okay, thanks for the advice,
Brian. Dude. Thanks for calling in.
All right, so last week we talked about building our ultimate home server.
Yeah.
And it was kind of cool. We just kind of kicked it off, mulled around some ideas of what we want in our home server.
Mm-hmm.
And we started talking about the idea of using SUSE Studio to build that distro so that anytime we wanted a latest up-to-date CD and ISO image or a VMware image or a VirtualBox image, we can just go there, create it, get the latest revisions of those packages, and boom, we have an updated version of our customized server.
It's pretty cool because I think we can share out the link, so we'll have a VMware image for you guys. If you didn't see our interview with the OpenSUSE guys, we did cover SUSE Studio in that like 3 or 4 episodes back. Really cool service. I mean, it is literally you build a distribution through a web page. You're building an operating system inside a web page. It's crazy, you guys. So we've been kicking around this whole idea. You did a blog post. It was really cool.
I did a blog
responses.
Post, and I got some phenomenal. So basically what I asked the people is, what is your ultimate server? You know, I know what I want, but
I want
to know what you guys want so we can figure out how to do it, and so we can tell you how to go into something like SUSE Studio or a different distro. We don't want to force you into one distro or another, because there are remixing tools for Ubuntu and Fedora, and there's a great one for Debian. So there are ways to do this with other distros.
We're doing it with SUSE Studio as a sort of a test for the SUSE Studio process.
Because it's
kind
of newer.
And the idea of building a Linux distro inside a web page is crazy.
And I found out a couple of things that people were doing with their home servers that I didn't think they would do. Big one was people are hosting blogs off of their home server.
Off of their home network,
and
internet
so
connection.
When I thought of this, I thought, well, of course, I want my own file server. You know, it's got to have Samba, and I've got to have video streaming. And I've got to have maybe like Usenet and Torrents so I can, you know, have some functionality there. Mm-hmm. And I have some weird functionality, like I need a print server and webcams, and I actually am going to be running a BBS,
I
want to
do the webcam thing too. Yeah, your BBS thing is very cool.
So we'll be talking about a lot of that.
Yeah.
But really, what a lot of people wanted was a nice LAMP stack with WordPress on it or something like WordPress so that they could have their own blog run out of their house.
They don't want to
co-host it somewhere else. And
that was the most surprising thing to because me. Co-hosting's really not that expensive.
You do it through GoDaddy. It's like a couple bucks a month.
I know.
But I thought about it. And, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, it is kind of cool to say, you know, check out my blog. It's at my house.
Well, and also,
you are hitting my server.
If you want to update the web files, you just go over your local network connection, open up the file share.
It's right there.
The files, yeah.
Yeah, it's right there. That's very cool.
One thing you might, now, of course, with any distribution, you can install all of the packages you would need to run your own server. But if you just want to get a server up and running really quick, take a look at the XAMPP project. I don't know if we've talked about it that much on the show. XAMPP.
Yep.
You and I are both big fans of this.
That's it's great.
It is. You guys get ready for this. I'm going to go quick. It is works on any distro. Apache, MySQL, PHP, Pear, Perl, Pro, FTP, PHP, MyAdmin, OpenSSL, GD, FreeType, LibJPEG, LibPNG. Anyways, I'll stop there.
Yes.
But it goes on and on. It's all of that in a single directory. You get the full LAMP stack
in one directory. It's
you
great.
Drop it in your op folder, start a script, and now you have a FTP server, an Apache server, and a SQL server. What's gorgeous, I mean so super sexy about this, is you pick up that directory and you move it to a new server and you hit start again.
It's so great.
It's not known as the most secure implementation, but take a look. There are actually some scripts included with it to lock it down.
Yep.
And it'll ask you some best security practices. It's not that bad.
No.
Great quick way to get Linux and Apache and MySQL going as your blog server.
And the really cool thing is, once you've got a LAMP stack like this up and running on your personal home server, and you can look at this as either very, very good or very, very bad, is it becomes very easy to install a lot of web applications that are out there that will allow you to browse the file structure of any of your shares mm-hmm. or any of your paths on that server. Mm-hmm. So just like if you have Dropbox or Ubuntu One and you can have your centralized storage location, you can browse it through web, you can do that now with your home server.
Yeah, there's a
fairly easy.
I'm blanking on the name, but it's a PHP file manager, and it's really slick. And
if you just Google for PHP file managers, you'll find a ton of them. And some of them are terrible. I'm going to be honest with you. Some of them are real, real bad. They're just terrible.
Terrible.
But some are really good and worth checking out. I'll try and dig some up and throw them up on my blog so you guys
Xamp
can get some.
Xamp might actually be including a free PHP file manager now. I think they might have added that. So if you grab Xamp, it comes with one.
Ajax Explorer, someone in the chat room is mentioning, is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a good one.
So there's lots of options there for that. And with now the combination of having good Samba on your server mm-hmm. with an FTP server, so you're looking outward with an outward connection, and then a web file manager.
You're really getting your bases covered.
You're getting almost the full functionality of something like Dropbox. The only thing that you're missing is you need to set up on all of your machines a set of like rsync scripts and the like to really set up that synchronization between
all
your points.
What if you went crazy? I mean, what if you had your home server, and what if the FTP directory of your home server lived inside a Dropbox folder? So you had Dropbox access to your FTP.
That's awesome.
You could share out FTP links to other people.
That's a great idea.
That could be pretty cool.
So what I actually did is I got WebDAV set up.
Okay.
So I can mount my drive as a WebDAV
and
share.
And in Nautilus, that shows up right as a folder on your desktop. Boom. You double-click that sucker. Yeah. You're browsing like it's a local file
you
system.
You browse it. It's not going to time out. Like an FTP server, you know, you're going to hit some timeout issues. It's going to be kind of a pain sometimes. It works
auto-logs
good.
Logs you out.
It works good for synchronizing, but you're not going to want to work out of it.
Yeah.
So kind of what I have, you know, I have like a symlinked like WebDAV shares and things like that. And you can really get a lot of cool stuff set up that way.
Now, I was also interested to see a lot of people mention that an important thing for their home server was storage redundancy. But the approaches were a little differently.
Everyone wanted something different.
And I haven't decided what I think, but for my approaches, I think I'm going to leverage, I have a set of disk arrays, and right now I'm crazy. I'm doing a JBOD, basically a large association of disks, not in any particular RAID. Yeah. I'm going to take those. I'm going to have to lose some capacity. I'm going to RAID it up, and I'm going to put my virtual machine on that array. And then I think what I'll do is as a secondary source of storage is like maybe a more archival storage. I haven't quite figured it out. I'm going to go Drobo.
Yeah.
Because I want something outside the box that I can pick up and attach to another server.
Yeah.
I've done too many of these, build everything in one single box, and everything lives right there.
And then you get screwed. Super
easy. Like a year later, I'm like, oh no, what am I going to do? I'm stuck. And it's like, I want to pick that up and move it and be done.
You know, I made that mistake. I actually built and you guys forgive me for this one. I built a Windows Home Server years back. When they first came out with Windows Home Server. And the reason I did it was that it provided a very nice way to stick together mismatched drives.
Yeah, they called it the Windows Drive Extender or something.
Yeah,
like
I mean, other servers allow this too, but it was basically an easy way to do it. And I had some old hardware lying around, so I threw Windows Home Server on there. Give it a shot.
Well, we should also mention you got the Home Server software for free.
Yeah, I got the Home Server software for free, so that kind of made that decision a little easier. And it worked really well for a little while.
Yeah, exactly. Then it turns out to be, it's Windows.
Right. It was a Windows server, and I was like, you know what? This was a total mistake. I never even really intended to have that much stored on it. But, you know, I keep backups of everything. I rip all my movies. Right. I do all that stuff.
The challenge becomes backing up that backup.
And after a couple of months, I had 2+ terabytes of stuff on there, and now I'm stuck using that system. And so I've finally gotten away from that, and I've finally got everything backed up and moved over to a Linux-based server, but I got stuck, and it was so hard. It was like
I was stuck again.
I was like vendor locked in.
Exactly. And that's how I feel like I'm at that spot right now, and it's because I've built everything on this massive array of drives that I just have to figure out a way to pick it up and move it. Let's talk about the systems we built, because you and I plugged through Seuss Studio. What did you think of Seuss Studio?
I love Seuss's Studio. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
I thought it was really great.
Oh, man. They put together some really slick stuff in
here. You get some areas of configuration. Like, you get your general area of configuration where you can go in and set some of your basic settings, like your obvious things like your time zone and your default run levels and all that kind of stuff, which is really cool. If you want your firewall turned on, user accounts, S like that. Then you can personalize it. You can tweak the startup. What I really liked, you could add your own custom EULA.
I did, by the way.
You did?
Yeah. I had the first thing I changed, and I'm not going to joke around with you here. The first thing I changed was my desktop wallpaper and my custom.
Yeah.
I changed it because I still had some. I still had some Jupyter IO wallpapers.
Nice, dude.
Back from the old, Jupyter Linux days, which still look nice. So hey, there's that. Put those up in
Shebang.
There because that looks cool. That bad boy. That's my desktop wallpaper, and the EULA specifically dictates that anyone can use the distro, nice. But if they're not Brian. That they actually have to do a rather funky dance and video it and mail it to Brian.
Hey, they accept it. They accept it.
It's the EULA, guys.
Yeah, it's the EULA. You can also do things, of course, like you can set up the VM image that it's going
to
generate.
Actually, I take that back. I had a little exclusion for Ireland. If you were in Ireland, you don't have to do that.
Nice. That's good of you, dude.
Well, you know, the Irish have been through
back
a lot.
Back to the homeland. Right? Back to the, yeah. The Irish have kind of I prosecuted people.
Yeah. I mean, just think about like snakes
right.
and potatoes.
Rain.
Rain.
Rain and moss.
Right.
Lots of moss.
I kind of like moss, though.
Yeah, you too. And I don't mind rain either.
So I got set up through SUSE Studio.
Yeah.
Now, SUSE Studio has the functionality to basically let you add in your own repositories to pull software packages
and
from.
And they have what's called patterns, which are like pre-selected
yes.
software packages. So they have
That's
the network
cool.
admin. They have the enhanced base. So you get the extra
yep.
command line tools. Got to go for that. Software management tools. One of the things I opted to install was all of the Yast stuff. I'm going to try their Yast auto setup of a Samba server.
Nice.
I've used that before, so I know that's going to go okay. But
yep.
it's a nice thing if you know what Samba is. If you don't know what Samba is, it's how you do Windows. It's how you share things to Windows computers over network from a Linux box. But it also happens to be a fantastic Linux to Linux communication protocol because the Samba server and the Samba client on a Linux box, they know when they're talking Linux to Linux, and they can actually. That's pretty slick. So I went ahead and I said, I think I'm going to make, instead of NFS, I'm going to make Samba my network protocol.
Yep.
So I'm going to go with the Samba route. I'm not going to do the domain stuff. That's just too much work. I don't need
no,
all that crap.
I don't need that on my home server.
No.
That just almost seems like anything. It's just limiting people's access to my stuff. And I don't want that in my house.
Now, here's an interesting route. I don't know if I'm not planning to run a GUI.
I am.
But I'm going to have it there so I can remote into it if I need it.
Yeah. See,
so I went and threw that in there.
You know what? I think a little different than you did.
Yeah, you went more desktop.
I'm installing friggin' everything. My base distro is like 3.5
gigs
in
size. I'm going to try to get you ready for this. I'm going to try to get this thing running on a system with a gig. The system's going to have 2 gigs of memory in it, but I'm going to design it to run for a gig.
You mean a gig of RAM?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, come on. Even if you pimp out like a GNOME or KDE desktop, it's going to run great.
Here's what I got,
RAM.
Though. See, I've got Dropbox, which takes a ton of memory. I'm gonna have a
Usenet
client.
And like video encoding going.
Gonna have video encoding.
Yeah, that does
you had the idea of. See, I wanted to do something like a real time encoding on the fly.
Yeah.
And that because I'll have a PS3 and an Xbox in my house, and sometimes the media formats won't play on that.
Yep.
That I have in my server. So if I transcode them on the fly and stream them to the box, that requires a lot of CPU. But you suggested go with offline encoding, set up an FFmpeg script, or use something like Handbrake to on the backside of the server, maybe at night.
And drop it into like a Dropbox folder.
Yep. That stuff that's in
re-encode.
There, and then have it put it in the final destination once it's transcoded.
Yeah.
Means I can go a lot lower CPU, lower power, lower cooling, all that kind of stuff. That really set the bar a lot better there. But what I'm going to do is jack up the memory usage at night. So I'm going to jack all that stuff up.
Jack
I included like
jack
GUI
it.
Stuff for all that.
Nice.
It's going to be cool. I don't know if I'm going to turn this on, but I installed all
the downside there,
scary
of course,
stuff too.
Is that you have to go through it and really take some time to set up all your FFmpeg scripts. You have to script it so in a cron job it cycles through everything in a folder.
I have a plan, sir.
Oh, you have a plan?
Well, what I don't have yet is this isn't a complete package, but my thought was is if I scheduled like a cron job for say starting at 11 o'clock, I don't know exactly what time because sometimes I'm still up late working. But if I scheduled a cron
like
job
between like 3 a.m. and like 6 a.m.
There's a program, I was trying to find the name of it, but I can't remember what it's called, that will monitor a folder. And so I could launch that program, say 11 o'clock at night. It checks the folder, does all the encoding, then closes.
Yep.
So I'll just do that. I didn't really come
to that's a pretty cool way to go.
I didn't really come to a great solution for my home DNS server. I could just do bind, but it just seemed like that's
I'm
over.
I'm not using a home DNS server.
I go back and forth on it.
Yeah. See, I mean, I thought about it, but. Sometime later on, I might add one, but I just don't see the need for it myself. I'm not doing the video encoding on the server like you are.
Yeah.
I keep everything in one standard format anyway, whereas you kind of dabble in a bunch of different formats, around. So it makes more sense for you. So my server requirements are really much lower hardware wise than yours are. Like I'm going to be having the file server.
I'm trying to curb that.
I've got Usenet going.
Yeah.
I've got a print server going.
You're going to do a BB MUD,
and I'm going to do a big Telnet BBS, so people can telnet into my home server. Mm-hmm. Got that set up with something called Synchronet.
That's
which is
cool.
An open source Linux-based BBS package. The cool thing is it can use FreeDOS and like DOSBox to run old DOS-based BBS door games.
Right.
And it's going to – it's a little 16-line Telnet BBS, which is a BBS. It takes up almost no bandwidth even at 16 lines.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I did some experimentation. Takes up almost no processing power even with a bunch of connections going.
Yep.
And I'm sticking that in a little virtual machine that does nothing but a BBS.
Are you going to do hardware RAID for your disks, or are you going to do something like software with LVM?
So I'm going the LVM route. So
I think so. Now, LVM itself isn't inherently RAID, but you can combine it with a RAID solution. And then you get the nice thing about LVM is you get that you're going to accomplish that thing you were trying to get with Windows Home Server, where you can throw a bunch of various different disks at it.
Yeah.
And one large pool to the operating system is what it'll appear as.
See, that's what I really want. Because
it's one mount point with all your stuff underneath.
I've got a bunch right now. And, you know, as like right now, like 2 terabyte drives are becoming cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
You can pick up a 1.5 terabyte disk. Cheap now. I mean, that's awesome. But you couldn't do that a year and a half ago. A year and a half ago, a 1 terabyte drive was just becoming affordable and into that good range.
Yep.
So I don't want to be stuck with right now saying, okay, I'm going to go for a 2 terabyte drives across the board. And, 2 years from now, 5 terabyte drives are going
to
be
super
cheap.
You don't want to have to break the RAID.
I don't want to have to destroy all my investment in my old drives.
Yeah.
I don't want that. I want to be able to mismatch. That's important to me.
Now, Cybreeder in the chat room was asking, why are we using FreeNAS? We covered that in part one. We also talked about a little bit about OpenFiler.
Yep.
Basically, it came down to the stuff we wanted to do on our servers. The last thing I was going to mention.
Plus, I wanted to build my own. I think a lot of it was I wanted to geek out a little
bit. And try SUSE Studio.
Try out SUSE Studio, build my own server, and call it my own distro. Because so my whole home network is all Doctor Who themed, right? Because
yep.
I'm nerdy.
Yep.
That's what I do.
You like it.
So my home server is the TARDIS, right? And that goes on from there. And so it's we're calling it TARDIS 2.0 is the distribution.
I like that.
And it's our own little thing. And it feels cooler that way to have your own distro pulled together like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is it necessary? No.
No.
There's some great server distros already out there.
Yeah.
FreeNAS, there's so much stuff you can grab. That's going to do 90% of what we're doing here. And then you'll do a little bit of tweaking for the rest of it. But for this, it's going to be an out-of-the-box solution when we're done. So that's kind of cool. Now, when I am finished with this, which is going to be here, hopefully here shortly, because I got to get my home server back up and running.
Thing.
My server's down right now because I'm doing all
this work on it. Yep.
I'm going to put it up on the SUSE Gallery.
Me too. I was just trying to figure out. It is downloadable. Our VMware images, we'll put a link up to them. You guys can download them.
And you guys can download them and try them out.
One last bit of advice I just want to give everybody from I was thinking about the file system layout. Do I want to do like some stuff in maybe like a slash media, some stuff in different folders? I've decided I'm going to do everything under a slash server mount point. Because then I just back up that mount point.
Yeah.
And I move that mount point to like theoretically I'll be able to detach my server, because I'm going to do everything inside a virtual machine. Everything's going to be under slash server.
Yep.
And I'll be able to detach that from the host OS and move that to any other physical box that has VirtualBox installed and then start it up again.
Yep.
And my server will move. A little bit of cold water from Oracle this week on using VirtualBox for my home server. I'll be honest with you, because I just don't know where that's going now.
But VMware player and server are both working great still.
And this also will produce. SUSE Studio will also produce images that work under Xen or KVM.
Switching is super easy.
Exactly.
We do it the SUSE Studio way. We can switch around easily.
Yep.
One other feature I should mention. So for the Usenet side of thing, I'm going with SAB NZBD.
Yep. Ditto.
Which is a nice little open
source. I looked at Hella NZB, but it's just not going anywhere.
It's kind of an abandoned project. So SAB NZBD allows me to basically what I've got is I've got a folder on my server that I can connect to over over WebDAV or Samba or FTP. It's basically, I call it NZB incoming.
Yeah.
I drop NZBs there, or my wife can drop them there. We search for them online. You know, if I want to download the latest version of Ubuntu ISOs, the fastest way I can do it is over Usenet right now. Drop an NZB in there. It sees that it's there, detects it, auto-downloads it into NZB downloaded, auto-unpacks it, auto-unrars it, sticks them all in subfolders there with date and time and name.
A thing of beauty.
And that same folder is now accessible over the web client and FTP and everything else, means that if I'm on the go and I'm having a hard time getting something, I've only got a few minutes to download it, my bandwidth at home is so nice.
And I'm often the client where bandwidth is really restricted.
And so the best way for me to grab that information is to do it that way.
Yep.
So
it actually speeds everything up. The NZB files make that great. They're like .torrent files for torrent downloads. You throw them in the directory.
It auto-connects to your Usenet provider, downloads
you get home,
it all.
There's your file.
It's right there.
Love it.
It's waiting for you.
The other thing somebody mentioned, I think it was, I wanted to get his name because it was a great point. Robert, in the comments over on your blog post when we were talking about this home server build, Robert said, keep it simple. Your audience might be technical, as in the last audience, but their spouses or significant others might not be.
Exactly.
And that's one of the things you got to watch for, is you do want to keep the spousal factor high, approval factor high, because that impacts your success with the project. It's like your manager, your boss, only not in the sense that you'll get fired, just in the sense you have to listen to complaining.
Except it's way worse than getting fired.
It's way more
way worse, guys. Yeah, keep it super, super simple. You know, it's so, like, we have a little bit of a print server for one of our printers at home. Mm-hmm. We have that set up.
Yeah.
It's not that great. It's kind of flaky, I found, but I'm cheating. Our other printer is one of the Kodak wireless printers, which works great under Linux. Done.
I'll link to in the show notes what I'll be using to stream. The name is PS3 Media Server, but it actually works, of course, for anything that does network streaming. And what's great about it is it
does the re-encoding if you need to. Yeah,
it'll do the re-encoding, which is nice for on the fly. But it's also just been the most stable way I've found to have reliable connections. Every time I turn on my PlayStation or my Xbox, I want that menu item to be there, and I want to be able to click on it and play. Sometimes other software and services I was trying would just crash and give out. T-Versity was one I tried. I tried all these different things. They all were junk. This thing, though, I've been running it for months off of different boxes. I've tried Windows, Mac, and Linux. It runs on all of them. It runs great. I'll give a link to that. It'll stream the content on your new server build to basically any device that can play network media. It's really awesome.
So I went with a little different route there.
MediaTomb.
I went with MediaTomb. So we just had someone in the chat room shout it out as well. So,
MediaTomb is a good one.
MediaTomb is a great way to go. You know, we do most of our viewing though, connected to the Samba Share, directly. I have XBMC with as a media center. We connect to our Samba Share and we just stream it directly over that, and it just works great. The devices that don't have that capability, we use MediaTomb.
MediaTomb's great. It's just extra setup. I mean, PS3 Media Server for me was literally you just start it.
Oh, yeah. You just rock it and roll it, point it at a folder, and it goes.
Exactly.
MediaTomb.cc is the website for that one if you want to get more information on that. It works great. I don't have anything really bad or good to say about it.
I'll give it another try as I'm going through this build.
So I've been happy.
I'll give another pass because I'm not done yet, so maybe I'll... It's not that won't be in the virtual image you guys download. PS3 Media Server will be in that, but I'll give it a try.
MediaTomb will be in mine.
And if it blows my skirt up, I'll let you guys know next episode.
Yeah, and you know, if you don't like all of Chris's stupid server stuff, you can check out mine.
Oh, there we go.
What we really should do. We really should let people vote.
That'd be
I think
cool.
I mentioned that last week. I love the
That'd
idea
cool.
of people.
We gotta give
voting
our we gotta give our servers more time though, because I think I'm probably that's Alpha 1 that I have up there. I'll once I'm done after a few months,
I see what's
I'll
happening.
2.0.
Feeling a little nervous now. You're like,
no, I
oh,
just
man.
Don't think it's a done product yet.
What
it's like beta.
What I hear you say is, my friend, oh, Brian sure is stepping up to the plate and putting together such a badass
it's
server.
True, yeah.
I'm feeling a little intimidated, and so you don't feel
don't
you're
know
ready.
If it's that,
you're not ready
know
to play with the big boys.
No, I don't think it's done
it's
yet.
Okay.
I want it to be perfect when it's done.
Yeah, right.
You know.
No. No, no. I understand, man.
They're all going to vote Jeremy's server anyways. You know that.
Jeremy's server is just a free DOS.
Hey, wait a minute. I said we should wrap 10 minutes ago. All right.
Oh,
so, okay, everyone. That's our Linux home server build part 2. Now, we'd love to hear your feedback on all this, so send it in, jupiterkali.com. That'd be the place to do it. Or in wherever you're watching, leave a comment. Let us know what you think. What's your ideal server build? What would you do differently? Well, if we have some really big...
I'd love ideas.
Yeah, some big idea, we'll cover it on the show.
Absolutely.
Okay, Brian.
Okay.
That's our look at the home server build, a part 2.
And that brings us to the end of this week's broadcast, which was kind of action-packed, it feels like.
It was
like.
Epic, yeah.
I feel like there was a lot going on.
Yeah,
we're having to struggle
up.
To, like, make the show end on time.
Yeah.
But it's a little long one for you because we love you guys.
There you have it.
So I wanted to mention one other thing before we head out here.
Before we sign out?
A couple of weeks ago, I did the whole big how-to item on how to ditch cell phones.
Oh, sure.
And how to use a Nokia tablet running on Clear's network to kind of be a cell phone replacement if you're using Google Voice and Skype. I had a kind of a whole step-by-step way to do it.
Now, is Clear available everywhere?
It's got pretty wide service available in the U.S. and there's some good WiMAX abroad, but the same idea is applicable anywhere.
Sure,
and you don't need to use the N810. It was just a device I was using.
Yeah.
I've got an N810 WiMAX Edition tablet here.
Yeah,
it's a glorious little guy. It's nice. It's fast. Runs Skype. Runs MAMO Linux distribution. Was great. Makes me feel nerdy when I'm walking around. Has good WiMAX antenna built into it. Awesome. There's a picture of it. I have Clear service. I've had Clear service for 5 years.
Been a while.
I've had Clear service for most of Clear's life as a company.
Yeah.
Back when it was called Clearwire.
Yeah, you
and
had like
else.
Some sort of DSL problem, and you're like,
and
I work from home. I'm a software developer. I gotta have.
I had to have a backup.
It
so
makes
I
a
went
great
with,
backup.
I went
internet.
With Clear so that I also could be mobile, and when I take trips or something, I can go with it. It's really nice. Anyway, so I've got this little WiMAX tablet. I made a modification. It was working great. Working great.
Sure.
Made a modification to my account. Basically to consolidate my account, take advantage of some deals they were having, and add a new device.
Nice.
Well, turns out Clear has now a policy to officially ban Nokia devices from their network regardless. So because this is a Nokia N810 internet tablet and they no longer have an official contract with Nokia, no new service will be provided by Clear for device with the word Nokia printed on it. This obviously, I contacted Nokia tech support.
That seems dumb.
And the guy giggled. He's like, really? Nokia is not doing anything to stop them. There's no software update for this device that says never connect to Clear. Basically, Clear is just saying we don't want to support Nokia devices. There's no technical reason. In fact, if you have a device and you are not changing your account, it will still function fine. People are still using it in my area. I know a guy who has one of these living in the same town I live in. Works great.
That's too bad.
If he ever makes a change to his account or turns his account off and tries to turn it back
on,
you can never use it again. Ed, they're not notifying people of this.
That's too bad.
It's a real horrible thing. I tried to get some official comments from them because I've never heard of this before. Right? When was
why
last
would you,
time?
Why would you even want to do it?
Like if you go to AT&T or Verizon or something, right, and you've got a phone and it's unlocked and works on their bandwidth, they're like, they don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care if it's made by your rival. They will take your money and give you a service
plan. That's an interesting approach as a company who I thought was set up to earn revenue. But
seriously, you'd
think. I'm not a business major. I don't know how that kind of thing works.
So I called corporate headquarters, tried to get an official response because I'm like, hey, we've got largest Linux show on the planet. Would you like to
make a clarification?
Would you like to know? Because I just went out on a limb for you guys. I just pimped you guys. I just gave you guys business. And
you
guys turn
around
and basically they pick up a carton of eggs and they're like, hey Brian, egg on my face, They just pelted me with them.
Man.
And I'm like, you know what? We could fix this really easily. Just go into your system and it blocked your MAC address.
Change your MAC address.
Just change the MAC address for me. Just go in there and add it in there to like an exception list or something. Make it work.
I
can keep helping you guys because it'll show that you guys will work with customers.
Steve Jobs called Larry Ellison, who called the CEO of Sprint, who called the CEO of Clear, and said, I don't want Brian Lunduke.
Get him off your network.
Get him back on an iPhone. Get Brian Lunduke an iPhone stat. So, of course, Steve Jobs doesn't make calls directly, so he had to work through Larry Ellison.
So obviously, I'm not too happy. The good news is, there's lots of cool devices that run like Gizmo or SIP phones or Skype or whatnot.
Yeah.
Heck, the Nokia N900 I can use on T-Mobile or AT&T. There's lots of options out there. But this was the option I liked and had and was cheap
worked
well. You hate
to see stuff like that happen.
And this was the option that made me feel the nerdiest.
Right.
And they said, no, Brian, no more nerdy.
That's too bad.
And that made me unhappy. So I wanted to say that out there to anyone trying to get those devices onto Clear's network.
Something to take a look at.
Fight the good fight, but
yeah.
I don't know if you're going to make
it
on.
Maybe if they hear from enough people, they'll turn it back on.
You know, you may have to go with someone else. I know Sprint offers WiMAX coverage. You might be able to.
Oh, that's true.
I think hardware-wise, I think they're compatible, but I'm not sure. So you'll have to look into that. So kind of a bummer there. Not quite as much of a bummer as Oracle trying to steal your firstborn child, but...
Still in the bummer category.
On the bummer category.
Yeah.
Just remember, guys.
I definitely file it in there.
Illumination software creator builds for Android phones.
All right, let's wrap this sucker up,
It builds for Android phones, Chris.
That's awesome.
It builds for Android phones.
And MAMO devices.
And MAMO. It builds for these, even though I can't get on Clear's network with them. It builds for this computer.
All right, everyone.
That's a Mac and it builds for that.
That's incredible. Okay, well, I think that's all we have for this week's episode of the Linux Action Show. Now, we are live every Sunday at 10 a.m., and then we usually release sometime in the later afternoon after that.
I feel like I've just invented the internet, and I've got to tell everybody. I don't even feel like I'm self-promoting at this point.
We should start a Illumination Software Action Show.
You know what? If I could get a million people to buy this, I'd just sell it for like 50 cents.
That'd be awesome.
Hell, I'll sell it for 20 cents.
We've got a million listeners. Maybe that'll happen.
I don't even need to make that much money.
We just need every person out there to go to go buy the software, and we're set.
Just for like a little
bit. Hey, you already got a bunch out of the chat room.
Dude, you guys are awesome.
That was very cool.
You guys are awesome. You guys are making this possible so that I can keep adding additional platforms, which, by the way, there's a thread over at radicalbreeze.com/forum if you want to talk about what you want out of the Illumination Software Creator. There's also the Jupiter Broadcasting Forum at jupitercolony.com. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/jupiterbroadcasting.
Nice.
Super awesome. Stuff. JupiterBroadcasting.com. Other shows. Oh, I should make quick mention. I'm feeling better.
Nice. So,
you know what that means?
Does that mean Brian Lunduk's
Jupiter Files is coming back this week. It will not be tomorrow.
Okay.
Because I still hurt in the morning.
Yeah, mornings are the roughest.
I wake up in the morning, I'm still hurting, and the show's at 7 a.m. I got to be honest.
Maybe midweek?
So I got up this morning in time to do the show. So I thought, you know, I'm going to do a trial run.
Do a test run?
I got up this morning. Yep. There's obviously no show this morning, but I got up about 6:30. Was still hurting. Had to take me some medicine. Not quite there yet, but I'm getting better every day.
Medicine is whiskey,
my guess
by the
is
way.
By about Wednesday, the show will be back. We'll announce it on Facebook.com. We'll announce it everywhere.
Yeah.
And the show will be back with all sorts of aliens and Sasquatches and, you know, Chris sightings. We'll probably start having a Chris sighting section.
That.
We think we saw Chris here in Miami or something like that. Yeah.
In Miami.
Yeah. You know, we don't know where Chris is. Where'd he get this shirt? Probably Miami, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think so.
It looks like Miami.
All right, cool.
So we'll be back.
That's exciting. I think
that's it.
And of course, everybody should check out Jupiter at Night. We just did an episode.
That show too.
We went back and looked at like the big stars of the Expendables movie that came out this weekend, and we said, what were they doing before they were expendable? Sylvester Stallone, hairdresser. Jason Stamos, professional diver.
No, not Jason Stamos. Jason Statham.
Statham, right.
Yeah, the guy from Crank and
Transporter.
Yep. Dude, have you seen Crank 2?
No.
High Voltage?
No, that's why I haven't seen it.
Dude,
it's called High Voltage.
See it. It's the most ridiculous thing. To keep him going.
He has to be shocked.
He has to be shocked. So he like sticks car batteries into his chest.
Okay, that does sound awesome.
Oh, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
But so
anyway,
he was a professional diver. We talked about all that on Jupiter at Night. Check that out. And
yeah,
of course,
check that out.
That's Monday through Thursday
live
over Jupiter Broadcasting.
That's 9 o'clock at night?
9 p.m., dude.
Nice. Pacific time.
Pacific. All right, everyone. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Linux Action Show.
I'm exhausted now.
And we'll be back next week.
I just left it all out there, Chris.
Let's go take a nap.
I'm going to take a nap. I'm not together, man. Like,
no post-show cuddle?
No, I think what we should do is we should, like, Dick Van Dyke show it with two twin beds. So we're like...
That is classy.
You know, it's classier.
But I fall asleep easier in your bed. Can I start in your bed and then get over?
Turn the recording off.